putting it into words for people why art is a good idea as a gift. And welcome to episode 94 of Art Juice. This is honest, generous, and humorous conversations to feed your creative soul and get you thinking with me, Louise Fletcher.
And me, Alice Sheridan.
And today we're going to be talking, our main topic is about giving art as gifts, or rather, how can we make our art saleable as a gift? But before we get into the main topic, I wanted to read out a message that we got from Mary in Littleton, Colorado, in the US. And she said, I just came across your podcast a few weeks ago while randomly searching. I've only listened to about 4 episodes so far, and I just felt called to email you and thank you. I feel like it touches me personally, as if you are both talking with me in my thoughts. It's been such a joy. I can't wait to listen to more. I'm 27 years old, a full-time artist and art teacher, and just over the summer, I gave birth to my first child. Knowing a child would put a wrench in my creative flow, I have been trying hard to keep painting. It's a hard balance for sure, but your podcast came at the right time when I needed inspiration and encouragement to keep going. Keep inspiring others. Thanks again from Mary. So yay! Isn't that lovely? So thank you, Mary.
It was a lovely email. And I wanted to say, Mary, if you're listening to this one, when you get to it, hello. If you're listening, I would really recommend the book by Marissa Huber and Heather Kirtland called The Motherhood of Art. We had Marissa on the show a while ago. It took them over 2 years to compile this book. And it is such a fantastic collection of stories of women and how they keep their art practice going with children of all ages. So that would be a really good thing that you could ask for as a Christmas present, which is what we're going to be talking about this week.
Good segue.
Yeah.
So before we get on to the main topic, what have you been up to this week?
Not so much painting this week again, I'm afraid, folks. Been doing a little bit of it at home, but not in the studio. I've just had days filled with other things. One of those other things was a lovely, lovely thing. Somebody contacted me about buying a painting and obviously wanted to come and see in person, and we'd arranged a date for her to come and do that. And then we had restrictions came in place that we couldn't meet inside. So we're like, right, okay, what are we going to do now? And I said, well, I think it is still allowed because it's work. So we could either do it inside or we could do a garden visit. And then there was the third option. I can't remember what that was. But we decided to do a garden visit and it was really good fun. I put the paintings out that she was interested in and then a couple more so that there was some choice. Thankfully, the weather was okay. She came in through the back gate and we stood in the garden at a distance. The light, of course, is fantastic. You know, the best way to see the paintings. So that was quite good. And then I was also listening to something on the radio and I was thinking, I just thought this is the first, a garden visit. I've never sold a painting in the garden before. And yet somehow it just felt like, okay, fine. Well, we'll do it this way then instead. And I think there's this natural shifting that maybe is really good for us, right? Well, what can we do instead? And the next day I was listening to, I don't remember his name, I'm afraid, but the director, president, don't know, somebody of the Birmingham Royal Ballet, who are putting on their first performance. And all the dancers have been rehearsing in bubbles. So they basically have a full performance and they have each group has formed an isolation bubble and they are not being on the stage at the same time as the other groups. But he said, of course, what they've had to do is they've had to have multiple groups just in case if one person in one group tests, then the whole bubble is out. So he said it's been an incredible logistical challenge, but he said they were just so determined to do it and find a way that they could carry on rehearsing, practicing and performing. And this is what they've done. And I thought that was rather a nice piece of good news to have on the morning in the radio. So I was quite enjoyed that. How's your week been?
Did you see that video? It was a band and I think it might have been the Flaming Lips, but I might have got this wrong. Mm-hmm. In bubbles.
Literal bubbles. The audience.
And I was laughing because I was watching a conversation between some old friends of mine who was saying, oh, great, we could maybe go to concerts again. And then one said, yeah, but what do you do when you need to go to the loo? And at our age, you need to go to the loo. You can't be completely encased in a bubble and you have to bounce your way out to the toilet.
No, that was a bit like, it was a bit like zorbing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be quite fun in the audience as long as you don't have a drink in your hand. And I can't imagine that would work very well.
And then they were all saying, yeah, imagine when we were 20, we would have just gone for it. But now we're like,
oh, totally.
What if I need to go to the toilet? Oh, I'll never be able to manage.
It's like a really safe mosh pit, isn't it? Mosh pit and a ballpark. One of those awful things that toddlers go in combined grown-ups.
Yeah,
oh, funny.
So I've been busy painting, still got plenty of time for that, which is good. I find I'm getting about 20 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
But good. I work on most of the days, including weekends. There'll be an hour or two, so it's surprising how many other things there are that take you away from it, even when you're fully committed to it. 20 hours is still, I think I used to imagine that a full-time artist who was working on their art committedly was doing it for 40 or 50 hours a week. I didn't realize there's all this other stuff to do. But it has been really good. Lots and lots of productive stuff. And just typical, last week, I think it was, I said, I'm doing this free painting, which isn't meant to be anything. And then it emerged into something. And maybe it was 2 weeks ago that I said that. And it's so exciting, though, because what it emerged into, it's a diptych. And it made me kind of crystallize. So I've done so much journal writing about this project, so much reading. I had about three ideas I thought might be the central idea. I've said from the beginning, I don't know why these poems, I don't know why I love them so much, because I'm not particularly a poetry fan. I don't read poetry on a regular basis. But it kind of crystallized for me through these paintings. And it's a reminder again, because they were totally free paintings, whereas literally I do not care what happens here. It's a reminder that when we do that, that's when it comes through.
And what do you think you've discovered that's new in them?
What I've discovered is what it is that is so central to his poetry for me, which is it's all about, there's so many themes in it, but the one that resonates for me is the life force of nature. He writes a lot of nature poetry, which is on the surface quite harsh. It's about hawks ripping off small birds' heads or pigs dying and laying there, their carcass laying in the mud. It's about the reality of nature. But I was listening to another poet talk about him, and she said, when you actually feel the poems, the nature is lit with beauty. That's the phrase that she used. And that's the way I feel about it. In particular, I realized it's one poem that's central to my love of his writing, although I love many of them. And these two paintings are in response to that one poem, which is about a hawk roosting. And the hawk, when we were at school, we were told it's a poem about a dictator who wants to kill people and rule the world. And
I remember doing that at school. Yeah.
And I used to think, no, it's not. It's a poem about a hawk. And I've even got my notes where I've written, it's a poem about a hawk, it's a poem about nature. So I still read it and I still see it's about the absolute purity of what an animal is or a bird compared to.
Okay. But what I mean is, in the paintings that you're doing, because you say that you've approached these with a totally new, free way, what has that given to your painting that you feel is different? Because they're quite similar to paintings that you've done before. It doesn't feel like it's been a shift, because looking at where those paintings are getting to now, it seems like you had a play and now you're pulling it back a little bit to the way that you paint anyway. So what feels different in the painting?
It's funny you say that, because I've had so many messages saying, oh my God, these are so different, like over and over and over again. This is so different for you. What feels different?
Why do you think they're different? What am I missing then when I'm looking at
you're first of all, I think you're trying to have this conversation about the aesthetics of them, but I can't separate what I'm saying to you from the aesthetics of them because it's so tied up. All this painting I've been doing is so tied up in trying to get to the bottom of this and then communicate it. Mm-hmm. And I always say to other people, until you know what it is you want to say,
feel,
you can't say it, whatever that is, whether it's the you want to say the color blue is beautiful, or you want to say, you know, this feels wild and crazy, or you want to say a deep political message, whatever it is, until you know what it is, you're going to fumble around and the paintings are going to look. So to me, first of all, the discovery is that how I felt when I was making them is how I imagine it feels to be an animal in its own environment, you know, completely attuned to its own environment.
Yeah.
And the difference, when I look at them aesthetically, so the difference is, I've got one like just behind me. It's dead as a dodo. It's just flat and dead. It's my old way of painting. It feels dead to me. And these feel full of life. They feel full
of
life.
That's what I'm trying to get at, though. When you say that's dead and these feel full of life, what translate that into physically, what are you doing differently the studio now? What do you, are you working faster? Are you working slower? Are you thinking less? Are you working with more limited colors? Are you deliberately, like, what does this being in tune actually look like tangibly when you come into the studio and when you're physically painting? That's what I'm trying to get
for me. So
yeah,
it's what I was saying at the beginning. It's what I've said all along. It was not thinking. And this one I'm pointing at, that I worked on that yesterday quite deliberately. I felt really good. And then I left. And then I was like, I came in this morning, it's still dead. The difference with those was that because I genuinely didn't care, and they were cut up pieces of canvas that I hadn't even measured properly, so I didn't even know what size they were. It was as if I was working on paper. And so I was fully engaged in playing, as in, what do I love doing? Literally doing it, whether or not I think it's valid, real, has anything to do with what. So for example, I use stencils on here.
Right.
Use stencils. Because I think they're not valid. It, like, somehow that wouldn't tie in with how would a stencil of some little triangular shapes tie in with these poems? It wouldn't. So don't do that.
Yeah.
Or putting my hands on and just making marks with my hands.
Yeah, this is what I mean. What has it translated into?
Yeah, so it's complete freedom. So that's when they started, they were very, very crazy and chaotic. But I might like to do some where I don't tone them down as much. Mm-hmm. But for this particular poem and this particular thing, I know I need that feeling of space in them as well as craziness, because it's a hawk up in the sky. It's not going to be all. So depending on what I'm thinking about when I'm doing them, some of them I may leave crazier and busier, but it's going back to that thing of, it's just for me. I finally has dawned on me, truly, even though I say this to other people, that there isn't a right way, and that it doesn't matter what I do. If I do it with my whole heart and soul, other people will love it. Not all the people, but someone. Mm. And it's so freeing. So what I want to do now is the ones like this one that are a bit dead, I just want to go, right, start again, forget what's on there, and just paint like I did on those. And I'm very happy with other ones that I finished already. I'm very happy with the sanded ones. They kind of have the same feeling, because they were free in a different way. But I need to channel that coming through, which means I need to be able to come in and think about all of them in the way I thought about those scraps of canvas.
Yeah. It's a lovely way to be able to approach a painting. And I think if you can hang on to that feeling almost of coming into a painting that has got a lot on it already, as if it's a fresh one again.
Yeah.
Does feel fantastic and leads you to such, I mean, places that you can't plan.
Yes.
You can't plan, you can't think about in advance. But I suppose what I was trying to get at is, in terms of the practice of what you do, what has it taught you that you'll carry with you and do again? Because while I agree entirely that a lot of it is about feel, a lot of it is also about you always gaining a deeper understanding of the materials that you use in order to use them efficiently, joyfully, success, just knowledgeably towards the result that you want to get. And I think sometimes it takes quite a while to identify that and to put that into words, but that's really where the learning is. It's going through the process that you've been through and then thinking, well, actually, I really, and that's where the being in tune and being in touch with things is, that you do things instinctively and intuitively because you understand that it's going to work, or you understand what it's going to bring to the painting. And you just feel like now is the time to let go. And now is the time to not rationalize, but be a little bit more careful. And it all of those things you've got to, this is the other thing is, do you feel that sometimes you're in the mood for one kind of painting and another? And that's I find that quite a difficult thing. Sometimes I'm in the mood for painting one kind of way, but what the painting actually needs at that point is another kind of painting.
Yeah,
that's why it's helpful having one on the go, because you can go, okay, I feel in the mood for, you know, big gesture. Right, I'm going to go with you today.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I'm not conscious of that, but probably it sounds reasonable. I mean, one thing I must say is, I said last week or the week before, oh yeah, by Christmas. I'm like, oh no, yeah. No. I want to go way longer on this. I don't want to be rushing by Christmas. I'm having so much fun now. And I'm also making charcoal drawings and collages and all sorts of stuff, which is all going to feed into the eventual book.
Yeah.
So I just want to keep going making.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, you'll know. It's like when a painting finishes, you'll know when the kind of end is due.
Yeah,
maybe there'll be a chapter one and a chapter two. Okay, all right, that was good.
Yeah, that was good. I think we've gone on a bit long about my painting,
sorry.
So for our main topic, we thought that with only a few months to go until Christmas, whatever Christmas is going to be this year, yay, really nice and quiet. But we're still going to be giving people gifts, aren't we? So we thought, we've talked about this a little bit before, but let's go into it in some more depth, talking about how we can make it easy for people to buy our work for gifts, how, in what ways our work can be given as gifts, and even perhaps whether we want to give art as gifts, but just the whole idea of art as a gift. Now, it's a little bit... I'm a little bit out of my depth, only given the fact that I won't have a single thing to sell this year by design. So I don't have any plans to do anything to make my work easy to give as gifts. But I do think normally it's been something that I've been interested in, and I know many of our listeners will be interested in. So how do you want to tackle this, Alice?
Well, I think there are a couple of stages to it. I suppose the first thing to think about is whether you want to go the whole hog of encouraging people to find your website via searches. For example, you could write a blog or a page on your website that is directed and specifically about giving art as gifts. And within that, you know, you can use phrases like, you know, art as an anniversary, or what, you know, if you've ever thought, what can I give as an anniversary present? You know, that kind of thing is the kind of thing that you can then you can write that, you can share that out to people. You're more likely to find people who find your website that way, but it also gives people really clear direction and just pointer that that's what it's there for. Because I think very often when people actually come onto artist websites, they're there, they have a kind of browse around, they have a look, and then they leave. Whereas if you've got something that's a little bit more specific like that, it just triggers something in people's mind. They think, oh yeah, actually that's a good idea. Maybe, you know, I've got a birthday, significant birthday coming up, or we've got Christmas, or we've got something coming up. You can even be as direct as to say to them, you know, just make sure that you bookmark this page so that you come back when it is your birthday, or send this link out. I'm big into buying gifts for yourself, I'm afraid. So, and I think often that's what it is in art. That's what makes giving art difficult, because the art that you like, the art that you love, is often very much a matter of very personal taste. And that's what can make it quite hard giving it as a gift for somebody else.
Well, I think one good idea, if we talk on the SEO search engine idea that you just mentioned, if you can be specific, even better. So for example, yep, I could do something like Yorkshire landscapes, Yorkshire abstract landscapes for gifts. So that it, or Yorkshire gifts, or, you know, something. So if your work is specific to an area or specific to a topic, I think the more you specific you could be, the more likely you are to come up in those search results. And I love that idea. And then, like you say, having an easy option, click this link to send this portfolio to, you know, your loved one so they can choose their own gift or whatever.
Yep.
And I think there's a lot about on that page, it's the way we describe it as well. I was thinking about this when I saw the topic for today. It's about not just saying, do you want to give out as a gift? Click this link. It's like putting it into words for people why art is a good idea as a gift. How many spouses are desperately hunting around thinking, oh God, we've been married 40 years. I don't know what to give her this year. And it's wording that describes on that page that this is a personal, that there's something very personal and special about giving the gift of art. When they understand and letting them understand what your work is about in a very emotive way, so that they feel they're giving something more than a painting as a gift.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think that's why, in particular, perhaps this year more than ever, I mean, Christmas will be different. And, you know, hopefully, I think I have never been a big fan in just buying presents for the sake of it. I mean, yesterday we were out, for example, we were buying my daughter a new bed, and it's going to be gorgeous bed that she's super excited about having. And one of the reasons we could do that is, quite frankly, because for the last couple of years, she hasn't really had many birthday and Christmas presents, because there hasn't really been anything in particular that she's wanted. Yeah. And we don't do that. Like, if there's nothing that I don't buy a pile of stuff just for the sake of it. And that means that when there's something that she really wants and it feels a bit luxurious, we can do it. And I like that so much more. And I think that if we can, one of these things, we get to get away from gifts as kind of almost slightly thoughtless, meaningless tat that you just buy in order to give somebody something. You know, there's no doubt art is normally a bigger investment, but I think if you can write about it in the way that it involves an element of choice, that experience. So this garden visit, this was a gift. This is a gift for her husband. So what we have agreed is she has paid a 50% deposit for the painting that she thinks he likes. And I have removed that from my website so that nobody else can buy it. And then we are going to set up a secret visit for him that he is not going to know about. That either he comes to the garden visit or he comes to the studio, which is big enough to have people in. So that the whole thing is an experience and he gets to choose. So at that point, if he chooses another painting, that's fine. I'm happy to exchange it. Now, this is a larger painting, so that there is more that perhaps I'm prepared to do in terms of exchanging and organizing all of it. But the whole point is to make this an experience that is exciting and that they choose together. And I think for anything that's larger, that's a really important element. So when you're writing about it, anything that you can do that will take away that worry that people have about what happens if I choose it for somebody and they don't like it would be a really good thing to add to that page. So for example, you could talk about whether you will exchange a painting for another one of similar value for a certain period. Yeah. If somebody buys something online anyway, they have a 14-day period, but that's different for obviously Christmas. People are thinking longer term than that. So you could make a note and make a decision about what your exchange would be for something like that. If somebody buys a painting and they don't like it. That's a really practical thing that you can go the whole hog and have gift certificates and things. And I've got a page on my website that you can have a look and see the various different options that I do to do that. One involves a payment up front and one doesn't. One is simply a PDF that I have made available for people so that they can print it off, stick it into a little card if they want, they can give it to their loved one and then they can choose a painting afterwards. And that's totally to hit the people who leave things for till the last minute and don't know what to get somebody.
Yeah. I had somebody buy a painting as a gift and it was a friend of a friend. But I think I would have done the same for a total stranger. He bought one for his girlfriend at the time. And he said, I'm pretty sure she'll like this one, but what would you do if it's not the one she likes? And I said, of course, I'll exchange it. And that's exactly what happened. And she was mortified. She said, this one's beautiful, but it's this specific one I saw of yours that I really love. And luckily it was still available. So I just swapped them over. No, yeah. And actually he had to pay a little bit more because the one she loved was more expensive and he was fine with that. But I think I would have done that for a stranger too. I think it's just... Yeah. Relations, isn't it, going forward? You want to make sure everybody's happy.
But that's the thing to think about is, and again, put yourself in someone else's shoe. If you were buying a present for somebody and you didn't know whether they were going to like it or not, what would make it an easier decision for you? And a lot of that is confidence, is taking away the worries that people have about if they don't like it. So I think that's something that's really worth addressing. But you've got some other ideas here. Smaller things.
Well, yes, I was thinking about what could you do for smaller things. And some of these things I've done in the past and some I haven't. So thinking about creating a series of smaller pieces to give people an affordable option. This is a good time of year to do that. If you do small things on paper or.
And if you do that, don't do what I did and make things 20 centimeters by 20 centimeters, because then once you've got the border in, it's bigger than fitting in a postage envelope. So work backwards from easy mailing solutions.
Yeah. So making small original works I like, obviously prints, but that's, you know, it may be too late to organize that. But if you have prints, this is a good time, I think, to bring them to the forefront on your website. Make more of it, because a lot of people are not going to buy an original painting for Christmas, but they might be very happy to buy a print. And then books. We've been talking about making books of our work, making books on blurb and then giving those out as gifts. If you know of your work, if you have friends and family who love your art, you could make the books and give them out as gifts. You can also have them for sale on your website for other people to come and buy. And I think books are a really nice gift. So if somebody knows that their spouse or friend loves your art, they come to your website, they think, well, I can't buy a painting, I don't have that kind of money, but there's a book for sale for, say, £30. That can be a really nice option. And we don't make huge profit on those. If you use one of those sites like Blurb or Lulu, you don't make a huge profit because they do all the printing and they do all the distribution.
Yeah.
But you've now your work is in someone's house and it's like any cheap purchase. It makes that person more likely to come back and buy something else. So I love the idea of books.
That's possibly, do you think you can bang a book together between now and Christmas?
Yeah. I mean, if you're not going to put a lot of writing in it, so if you're going to do a photo book, you could literally
just do one that was just images.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't have to be writing a book, just putting images together, I think would be nice. We've talked about gift cards and then calendars. A few years ago, I did a calendar using Redbubble. Have you ever seen Redbubble?
I have.
It's really easy to use, but there's lots of other sites. I the only problem with Redbubble is it's in Australia.
Is it?
Yeah, and the shipping for calendars. The first time I did it wasn't too bad. And the second time I did it, and I mainly did it to give them as gifts, but I did sell some. And again, on things like Redbubble, you don't make very much money, but the quality of the calendar was wonderful. It was just that the shipping costs were so expensive. I mean, the quality, the paper was really thick and glossy. The colors were beautiful. I was really pleased with how it came out. I've not ordered their other things, although my mum did order a phone case of one of my old paintings of a cow. And that came out really well. So for quality, I can recommend Redbubble. But what happens is you get, say, if somebody buys a phone case, you might get £5 or £3 or £4. It depends what you price it at. They have their price and then you price on top. But again, it's a nice way. And Redbubble do prints, and those are very high quality as well for the cost. So. Yeah.
Contrado is another place that I'm looking at for these lampshades that I haven't ordered yet.
What's it called?
But they do all sorts of things. Contrado.
Contrado. And there are several more as well, which I can't bring to mind now. The lampshades, mugs, you might want to do that kind of thing. And it gives people, and it a lot depends on what kind of art you make, obviously. But some people's art really lends itself to that. At the time I was using Redbubble, I was making these really quirky cow paintings. And people love that kind of thing. They're really commercial. It's not anything like what I do now. But I sold all sorts. And it's nice every month when you get an email that says, you know, you made £200 this month or whatever. It's a nice little extra. But in the context of this conversation, it gives people a way to buy your art as a gift in a nice, inexpensive and easy for them way.
Yeah, and I think that that's important, that when you work out the costings, you don't make a huge amount on each one, but don't forget you're not involved in it.
Yeah.
So there's no effort at that point on your part. So I think it is worth looking into and exploring. My issue with those has always been, it's been the quality. Like I've looked into, I'm sure we've spoken about mugs before. I have a thing about having art on mugs because I think it's a really nice way of bringing it into your everyday, something physical that you use. I've quite enjoyed the idea of having limited edition seasonal ones that people then have to collect. I haven't yet found a mug that I like. I'm so fussy about mugs and I don't just want to bang it on any old mug. I want one that's got to be exactly the right shape, exactly the right size. The handle has to be right. And the only person that I found that's got the right one, they do it properly with, they do a system that's not kind of so immediate, so that you have to have a lot of them. And I just haven't had the nerve to do that yet. But finding something that you really like is my point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Rather than just, you know, see, there is there's a bit of research involved in that. But I think they can be great fun, some of those things.
Yeah. And like you say, with Redbubble is the only one I know of. So I'm not advertising Redbubble. It's just I've used it. It's so easy. As long as you've got a good quality photograph, all you literally have to do is upload it and choose. You can say, no, I don't want my painting on a duvet cover, but I do want it. And I don't want it on a t-shirt, but I do want it as a print, for example, or postcard or phone case or whatever you want. And then that's all you do. And then you literally just wait for money to come in. Now, a lot of money doesn't come in unless you are a good marketer or you have a very commercial idea that people love.
Yeah.
But it's a little bit, and it's money you wouldn't have had anyway.
It's like everything else, isn't it? If you're going to do it, you can't just do it and hope that people will find it. You've got to
Tell all your followers and you see it in your newsletter and et cetera, et cetera. But I just thought those were nice lower cost ideas.
Yeah, but probably not all of them, people. So you don't need to
pick one.
All of these. Pick one. Don't make a book and a calendar and start doing prints and gifts and talk about original art all at the same time. I would say it'd be quite nice to just add one thing. If you did this, if you added one thing a year as a test, I think also be aware that these things do come and go. So, you know, there was a stage where I thought that, you know, maybe I was going to take my prints away. They've been really good this year. They're not going anywhere. But so give things a little bit of time and don't just say, oh, well, I've done it once. It's not working. I think you know, come back to it again. Like everything, you can't just have it on your website and assume that it's going to grow its own legs and, you know, run away with instant success. It might be that it's something, if you do things like gifts or mugs, that they do sit on your website for the majority of the year. You get trickles and dribs and drabs, and then at Christmas it's something that you promote more heavily. Quite nice to have something that you can forget about for a while, but that's how I would do it.
I think if anyone's listening, I'm sure some people are listening who've got other ideas and have done amazing things with gifts, so it would be lovely to know wherever you listen to this, whoever's website you go to get it, leave us a comment or on Facebook or somewhere and just let us know if you've got other ideas. I think it'd be really interesting to hear from other people.
The one person that I know whose work looks fantastic on things like this is Nikki Cotton. N-I-K-I is her first name. And she does quite bright, colourful work. And I know that she has it available on various things. It looks fantastic. The other person I'm thinking of is Kate Green. Her work as well, that she has available on cushions, all sorts of things for interiors, and it looks terrific, really good. So yeah, it's worth keeping an eye out and seeing what you can add. Fantastic. Oh, hang on, something important, really important, before we finish talking about gifts is, as I say, gifts for yourself. You know what it's like. Oh, she says last minute, gifts for yourself, really important. Let your other half, let your family know what it is that you would like. If there's something that you would like in your studio for your painting that either you wouldn't treat yourself to, let them know that it's really what you want. And sometimes we all know some of the things that we want can be a little bit, maybe they can look a little bit dull or a little bit boring to somebody else. I mean, I remember one year I just said, I just really want wide brushes. And everyone was like, really? That's a really boring present to just buy and wrap up for you. And I'm like, paintbrush. It's like, no, but it's really what I would like. So please, could you get that for me? Or please, could you, it would be really nice if you could go in. I love this range of paint, but it would be fun if you could just choose me two different colors that I wouldn't use before. Choose, go and pick your favorite colors. And, you know, as a way of introducing something new. But at the moment, just be aware that the order time on some of these things can be a little bit longer. So you might want to start dropping hints about it now. And the same goes for books. Books are the other thing. Art books, fantastic presents for yourself, because often they can be quite expensive and we don't necessarily always treat ourselves. But somebody is looking to treat you, start writing a list for yourself, as well as just thinking about what you can give for other people. And if you're more interested about all these ideas about giving gifts, I have one of the things that I've been working on this week is more membership content. We're talking about print releases. There is already a section in there about all the different ways that you can create gift certificates and make that kind of thing available. I will be opening this up in early November, not as a big thing, but only to people who are on the wait list for it. So if you are interested in Connected Artist membership, you can find out how you add your name to that wait list on my website, alicesheridan.com.
To Inside Outside. So what have you enjoyed this week, Alice?
Well, furthering on to your earlier comment a few weeks ago about not being able to sleep, I have been testing some different sleep meditation podcasts. I'm afraid I don't have any that I can totally recommend to you at the moment, because some of them are a bit weird and freaky. But one of them this week, I did turn it on. There was this guy and I was thinking, this is not very relaxing. This is like, what is going wrong with this? And then I realized I was playing it at double speed. So he was going, you're feeling really sleepy. And it made me laugh before bed. I don't know how I'd managed to just kind of click that play at double speed button. But yeah, that's not a good way to do a sleep meditation. The other thing, I've got a couple of funny things that come into our email inbox, and Louise and I both got this and we both sent it to each other, and we just thought, you know, you might be interested. We thought that you might be interested. Anyway, it was somebody who was, they were talking about, you know, independent artists and relaxing with your art, and then it was a paint by numbers set. And we both sent each other the email on and said, ah, look what I've just received. So, you know, we really, you know, can't get away with not mentioning that.
I'm thinking about the opportunity of letting you some time to relax it from your busy schedule while making content for your followers with our exclusive paid by numbers. And it says, I think you and your audience would really like our products. What possibly makes you think that?
Anyway,
more opposite than what we think.
If you would like to do paint by numbers, you can find it at crafties.com. That is not an ad. I haven't even looked. I don't even know what I'm saying. But anyway, that made me giggle. I also got another email with somebody who said that they thought I'd be really interested in the following link, which was all about tips of how to start a podcast. So I did reply to that one as well. I said, thanks. I think it's all right. I think it's going okay. So why do people do these really weird it must work, these weird out of the blue marketing things.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, like you say, do a bit of research. They've just bought a list, I guess, and they just blast out and somebody is going to be the right person. I mean, there's a whole thing on YouTube. It's not paint by numbers, but there's a whole thing on YouTube of young girls copying Bob Ross paintings. Have you seen that? Bob Ross is like the American Rolf Harris, only without the dodgy background. And and he had this TV show where he wasn't painted by numbers, but he did traditional landscapes, and he showed you how to paint exactly like him, and you copied along. And now it's a trend for young girls to copy along on their channels and show their Bob Ross painting, and I guess in an ironic way. So, you know, you might get somebody like that on your list. Maybe it could become a thing on YouTube of people doing paint by numbers.
Do you think we're missing a trick? Do you think we're missing a trick in all the ways that we talk about marketing? And maybe really what we need to do is just be blasting people randomly. Yeah. And if you manage to get, there must be something in it, mustn't there? You know, if you throw enough spaghetti at the wall, occasionally something's got to stick, right?
Exactly. I got a funny email, actually, a slightly different kind of funny email. I was actually doing an interview with one of my members for my membership site. We were doing a member SOS thing where I was helping her with her painting. And I suddenly burst out laughing in the middle of it because I'd clicked on my emails looking for one of her images. And I saw this series of emails from this person, which started with, sheesh, stop with all the emails. And then the next email said, I'm so sick of your emails. These were the subject headers. And then the third one said, you have put me off the name Louise Fletcher for the rest of my life. And when I clicked, she looked like she'd got my weekly artist newsletter, like, but she'd read them all in a row. So she must not have seen them. And then she'd read three in a row. So anyway, I've put her off the name Louise Fletcher forever. So I wrote back and said, I'm very happy to unsubscribe you. But you did sign up at some point.
How funny.
Well, my inspiration was what I already talked about at the beginning, really. But what I've enjoyed this week in a kind of slightly depressing way, but I do recommend it to anybody who's interested in how the internet works and what's happening to us, is a podcast I've been listening to called The Rabbit Hole. And it's 8 episodes, so it's finished now. It's a New York Times investigative report about about YouTube and about the way YouTube's algorithm guides particularly people who are struggling in life, takes them down a rabbit hole, basically, based on what they're already been watching. And seemingly innocuously at first, just takes them further and further into this rabbit hole. And they have on a couple of people who fell into conspiracy theory, you know, some really crazy things, and then got themselves out of it. They have on a young girl whose parents, she's lost her parents to really strange conspiracy theories. But the interesting part about it, a bit like that Social Dilemma documentary, I think that's what it's called on Netflix, is it's just showing you how a decision that YouTube made which was for business reasons and seemed to serve users in the way they structured their algorithm, has actually just created mayhem and ruined a lot of people's lives. So it's really, I mean, it's very well done. It moves quickly. It's interesting. I know I made it sound a bit depressing, but I found it really interesting. So it's called The Rabbit Hole.
It sounds like it's a kind of deliberate ploy to lead people in a certain direction. But is it just that it's things that have similarities and links? And if you, like, it's a bit like one of those choose your own story books, isn't it? If you keep picking in that direction, you're just going to get more in that direction, right?
It's when YouTube decided to increase their revenue by hammering watch time. They wanted people not to click. What was happening was they were getting a lot of rubbish on YouTube to get clicks. So they wanted to improve the quality and improve the amount of time people spent on YouTube by giving them what they want. That was the theory. So it all sounds great. But what ended up happening was, for example, there was a lady who had lost her job, lost her money. Her husband had got, she got divorced. She was living in a trailer or whatever in America. And she started watching this liberal congresswoman in America called Elizabeth Warren. There's nothing wrong with Elizabeth Warren. She talks about the way big banks manipulate and take away from poor people, and she talks about the need for more consumer protection. But this woman had watched her one particular speech four or five times and was also watching things about financial worries. And so then what started to happen was she was shown things by people telling her there's a conspiracy of banks, which is different from saying banks are greedy and they're taking advantage of people. And then when she watched a few of those, it gave her something else. So it was recommending what it thought she was interested in, but it kind of accelerates. It takes that person down a track. And anyway, it was really interesting.
I do think it's interesting that worth bearing in mind with all of those things. A, to get educated and realize that it's happening. Mm-hmm. But also that YouTube might be the vehicle now, but it's always happened. Yep. Pamphlets, snake oil doctors, hundreds of years ago. It's kind of, and the thing about people in more fragile situations, again, I'm afraid human nature more susceptible to. I mean, it's a difficult thing, but I don't think it's particularly new. I think, you know, the danger is that it can be a bit more mass markety.
It's more ramped up because it can get to everybody faster. Well, yeah.
Worth understanding.
Yeah, and they ended it with saying, and YouTube's not as popular anymore, it's TikTok. And then they kind of left it on that note of, you know, what will happen to TikTok? What will that start doing? Because YouTube started out as cat videos and, you know, pop songs. That's what it was initially.
Nothing stands still.
Yeah, anyway, very interesting. Recommended. Okay, that's it for us this week. We've really enjoyed this conversation. I hope you have too. If you'd like
good conversations, but ending on something rather serious.
Yeah, sorry about that.
There you go. Lots to think about. We do promise you lots to think about. There you go.
I still promise you you'll enjoy it. It's very entertaining.
Okay.
If you'd like to find either of us on Instagram, you can find me at @LouiseFletcher_art. You can find Alice at, where are you on Instagram, Alice?
At Alice Sheridan Studio.
So, oh, there it is. It's in my notes. See, I don't pay attention. So do come and find us. That's it for us this week. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.